Greetings, my friends, and welcome to the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm Paula. Dramatic events have focused people's attention on the Islamic world, but what do those of us in the industrialized nations really know about the Muslim world? Our guest is the American reporter Genevieve Abdo. She lived in and reported from the Middle East for over a decade. She focused particularly on the Mideast's keystone country, Egypt. She talked to people from whom we rarely hear, people in the universities, professional people, and ordinary people on the streets. What she observed is in striking contrast to Western stereotypes and expectations. For instance,
we can't forget that this whole idea of, as you mentioned, a theocracy that is also democratic, this is a new phenomenon, at least in our lifetime, in this form. If the Islamic movement, the moderates, not the militants, the people that I wrote about, the moderates, if they're allowed to be more in control of their own destiny in Egypt, I think that we would find a better country as a result for Egyptians. Maybe not for us, but for Egyptians.
Genevieve Abdo reported from Iran for The Economist and The Guardian. She has reported from Islamic countries in the Middle East, North Africa, and Central Asia. As a correspondent based in Cairo, she covered the Middle East for the Dallas Morning News. She also covered the fall of the Soviet Union for Reuters News Agency. Ms. Abdo's book, No God But God, Egypt and the Triumph of Islam, presents a story quite different from what most of us in developed nations, especially America, think is going on in Egypt and within the larger Islamic community. Ms. Abdo currently holds a prestigious Nieman Fellowship at Harvard. That's where Bill Russell and I went to learn more from this remarkably insightful and courageous woman. Genevieve Abdo, I am regularly struck by my own and perhaps the human ability to look at something and not see it, to sort of look through it, to miss all the important things. I had the sense, as I thought along with you in your work, that maybe the West has looked at Egypt and much of the Middle East and just not seen it. Does that sound right?
Maybe the West has seen this part of the world through its own prism, and in a sense, they've seen what they wanted to see. So I think that that's a bit of the difference. And certainly it's easy to go to a country that is so foreign from our experience culturally, also in religious terms, and base your observations on what appears on the surface. You see, for example, people who seem perfectly part of the secular world. They entertain themselves the way we entertain themselves. They dress the way we dress. They have certain kinds of values that we have in America, family values, this kind of thing. So it's easy to make the assumption that they're like us. And I think that there's probably a tendency among Americans, maybe even more than any other culture, to try to find these similarities in other countries. The problem, though, is that probably in the Middle East, there's more of a divide between us and them, if you want to put it that way.
So we're looking for something that makes us comfortable and we can pick from the smorgasbord, and it turns out not to be true?
Yes, and I think that there is a sense of comfort in familiarity, of course.
Yeah.
So when Americans go to the Islamic world, they try to find aspects of these cultures that seem familiar to them, because that makes them feel comfortable.
And this divide, that's fairly central to your observations, isn't it?
Yes, I think the divide is very significant and profound.
How do you articulate that divide?
It's a divide that is based primarily on a completely different system of values. Once you penetrate the surface of a country like Egypt, for example, you find that people don't really have the same priorities that Americans do, for example. And by that, I mean there seems to be an understanding or an assumption in the United States that if you give people who are very devout Muslims a good job, if you pave their streets, if you give them fancy apartments, if you remove them from their impoverished existence, that somehow they'll abandon religion and that's all they really want in life.
All of these are material things in which
material things, absolutely.
And you're saying that that's not so?
No, not at all. During the years that I spent in the communities that are the subject of my book, in one area in particular called Mbaba. It's actually a city within Cairo. The one thing that struck me so much about this area was that people were not at all bothered by the fact that they lived in what we would consider to be deplorable conditions. In the early 90s, some residents there didn't even have running water. They had no jobs. Their whole life was just focused around going to the mosque, their local mosques, to pray, and there were over 1 million people living in this district, and just hanging around in the neighborhood, socializing with their family and friends. But they don't really necessarily need a better existence in terms of having a sense that their life is complete. If they can have families or their family around them, if they can go to pray in the mosque, if they have a religious community, that's what makes them happy.
And that village really was transplanted from another part of Egypt in some senses, wasn't it?
Yes. Historically, many of the residents who came to live in Mbaba had come from Upper Egypt, so much so that many of the streets...
Upper Egypt being to the south, which we
yes,
which is
exactly.
always
to the Sudan.
Exactly.
Upper Egypt, yes.
It was almost to the Sudan.
In areas such as Luxor and in another town called Minya, Asyut, these are some of the cities that are in Upper Egypt, or what we call Upper Egypt.
We're going to talk a great deal more about both Egypt and the whole subject of Islam when we come back with Genevieve Abdo, who is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with her in Boston. We'll all be back in just a moment.